perhaps we will be victorious after all. Welcome back to X Squared Radio Hour 2. In our last hour, we discussed the Gulf oil spill and its possible ramifications on our ecology. We had a couple of spokespeople, Leilani Munter, as well as an expert out there trying to make people aware that there's a microbe that could help us clean up the spill while they plug it. And by the way, I don't even know if they're really trying to plug it. I mean, mud and golf balls, let's get serious, people. Go after it with concrete. That's what we need to do. Plug that well and abandon it. In this hour, I want to talk about preparedness. I recently spoke to one of the founders of 1-800-PREPARE.com, Paul Faust. And I had a short interview with him on the phone. I thought it was so good that I will go ahead and play it for you now. So stand by. Here we go. Earth Explorers, I have often spoken to you about emergency preparedness. With me on the phone right now is the founder and business development manager for 1-800-PREPARE.com, Paul Faust. Paul, how did you develop the idea for 1-800-PREPARE.com?
1-800-PREPARE.com is something that I've been thinking about for a while, as well as my partner. Been a volunteer firefighter. Been around the security business, and it's something that's always fascinated me and something that I always knew that we needed in this country. And my partner and I sat down and decided to combine two of the things we love, emergency preparedness and marketing and entrepreneurship. And we also happen to be in the vanity phone number business, and we understand the power of brand and the power of brands to change and affect people. So we sat down and said, there's a hole in a marketplace here. It's something we care about, something we can make a change in. Let's start 1-800-PREPARE.com and give people in this country an easy place to go to get prepared.
You know, we only need look at this year's news to see why preparedness is so necessary. Now, I don't mean a few extra bags of chips or cans of soup. I'm talking about a long-term, sealed and safe resource that will save your life and the lives of your family and neighbors. Paul, how have you made packaging supplies so the average person living in an apartment or working in an office can be ready with everything they need to be healthy and warm for 3 or 4 days?
That's a great question. I look at preparedness and we look at preparedness a little differently than some other people might look at it. Some people think of preparedness as just preparing for the big earthquake or preparing for a tornado. But to me, preparedness is really preparing for everyday life's what-ifs. You know, you don't know if we're going to – where I live, the chances of hitting an earthquake are slim. But there's lots of situations, whether it be a house fire, whether it be a blackout, whether it be a chemical explosion, whether it be a terror attack in New York, that we need to be prepared for. So we have a wide selection of kits that are pre-made for people that don't want to build their own, that include the basic items you would need. And we also have an ever-expanding line of individual products that people could buy for those people that want to either completely build their own kits for their home, their car, their office, or they want to buy a pre-made kit, but they want to supplement. They want to add more food. They want to add more tools. They could do that as well. Our plan and our goal is to make kits available at all levels and for all people. So you want the basic kit, we've got that. You want a more advanced system, we've got that. So we're continually adding to the line.
And what's your mission with 1-800-PREPARE.com?
That's a great question, because this is not just a business for us. As a volunteer firefighter, my partner and co-founder, Greg Hammerschlag, is an EMT. This was all founded on a mission. We are building a business, but we have a mission to change the culture of preparedness in this country. There's a few great things that come out of that. Number one, we save lives. Number two, the more people we get prepared, the easier it is on our rescue personnel and our first responders, because they can go deal with the real problem. Three, the more people we get prepared, the more stuff we sell, the more good we can do, the more fire departments we can help, the more charities we could support. Right now, we're helping to support a search and rescue dog that's going from puppy through full training. She'll be FEMA deployable shortly. So the entire business is about doing well by doing good, and really trying to trying to change the culture in this country, this is a topic that should be talked about. It's cool to talk about. You should be prepared. So it's really all it is a mission beyond just a business.
Do you have, in addition to food and blankets and tools and things like that, do you have information that people can access? Like, gee, how do I purify water? Where do I go to find support in case of a tornado or an earthquake, a power outage, a flood? Where do I go for help? How can I learn how to be have a better preparedness mindset?
That's a great question. We have an information and resource section on the site, which is undergoing lots of changes. It will be added to on a daily, weekly basis. We have a team of experts, some of the most recognized names in the country, and we're adding more all the time that will be expert advisors to our company. We have an active blog. Again, the information and resource section, we're going to have a series of videos. There's downloads. There's going to be checklists. There's ebooks. So we view 1-800-PREPARE.com not as an e-commerce site, but as a resource. When you think preparedness from the very basic to the most advanced, we want you to come to 1-800-PREPARE.com, know that you can learn, you can get some downloads. If you want to buy some stuff, great. We'd love to have you as a customer. But that you know there's a safe place to go where you can get what you need from a knowledge perspective and a product perspective.
And what about the quality of the products? Are we talking about meals ready to eat? Are we talking about dehydrated food or filtered water packs?
Yeah, there's all sorts of products. And again, it's an ever-expanding line. We could have 15,000, 20,000 products on the site tomorrow if we wanted to. But it's a slow process of putting the right items on, making sure that we could manage them well, and also not giving people too much. There are people out there that understand preparedness and can filter through all this. For most people, and as we try and expand the conversation, if we give them too much, they shut down. So we're adding products as, you know, slowly and purposefully to add different categories, different levels, whether it be different tools, different first aid kits, different kind of prepackaged kits, different types of emergency food, whether it be 5-year food and water or 25-year food. So we are adding more and more, and with the guidance of our experts, we'll continually grow what we have.
Well, we here at X Squared Radio have the utmost support and respect for entrepreneurs who lead the way into a new understanding of self-reliance. Paul, it has been a pleasure to have you on X Squared Radio.
Hey, Brooks, one more thing before I leave, if I might, and it's been a pleasure. I thank you very much for having me. One thing I would like to do is I am going to create a coupon code on my site that if someone goes to 1-800-PREPARE.com and there's anything that they want to buy, any items they want, all they have to do is enter the coupon code Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, and they will get 10% off anything they order. That's for your listeners.
Outstanding. That's the kind of participation we like to see. Thank you so much, Paul. Have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks for your time, Brooks.
So there you have it, Earth Explorers. What we are talking about here is emergency preparedness. So I want to let you know that I don't make any money off of this. No commission, no profit, no nothing. This gives you 10% off if you put in the coupon code Brooks, B-R-O-O-K-S, by going to 1-800-PREPARE.com. So we're going to talk a little bit this hour about what earth changes are coming up. But first, Chuck is on from Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program, Chuck.
Hey.
How are you, sir?
Real happy to meet you there, Dr. Brooks. Thank you. I have a question about the Gulf.
Sure.
If we had the technology, which I'm sure we do, why have we not yet plugged that hole?
Well, because
politics has something to do with it.
I don't know if it's politics or economics, Chuck, I'll tell you. I worked in the oil and gas industry for many years. I did my PhD on oil and gas exploration. I could tell you they're probably trying to save that well. They want to put it back into production. They're not approaching it from the point of view of plugging that well, or they wouldn't be going at it with mud and golf balls. They'd be going at it with concrete to plug it.
Exactly. Okay, let me ask you a question. What role, in your opinion, what role does the government have in this, or should they have in this?
Well, of course, anytime there's an ecological disaster, I can tell you, we drilled a well in Kentucky one time, and we were sort of prepared, but we weren't prepared for this. We blew a 4-inch stream of oil across Highway 90 when we hit the oil structure. And the EPA immediately came in, and we had to shovel every single yard of dirt into barrels and haul it away. Now, you can't tell where that spill was today because of those efforts taken then. If the government had any teeth at all, they would be all over BP, making them shift whatever resources they had. I don't care if they have to haul a 500-foot-long tanker there full of concrete. It should be there in 24 hours. They should have a batch plant on site. And I don't care if they have to pour a mountain of concrete on top of that well at the bottom of the Gulf. It should be plugged immediately.
Right. See, you and I share the same sentiments when I ask you about politics being involved. What I'm saying is, when you get elected to office, it takes big money. To get reelected to office, it takes big money. And to do that, you need money from people like BP. So it makes me wonder how much we are pressuring them and why are we not pressuring them?
Well, I know that it makes it sound like it takes money to get reelected, but the real world, it takes votes to get reelected. And in order to get exposed to the people, you need the money to be able to reach those people. Now, the way our Constitution is set up, originally the House of Representatives was to mimic the House of Commons in the British parliamentary system. The Senate was to mimic the House of Lords. Senators were originally appointed by state legislatures. That way they would be beholden only to the legislators in the state, which are locally elected, and not so much running national campaigns the way they do today. Congressmen were designed to be public servants. That's why they only served 2 years. It was a burden for them. We kept that 2 year. So what happens is, as soon as that guy is elected, he has to go right back into campaign mode. He has to go right back into fundraising mode. So what we should do is we should ask for a constitutional amendment to change the term of a congressman from 2 years to 4 years.
Right.
And along with it, term limits.
I also think, like, if you run for president, it's a 4-year term, but you and I both know it takes a lot of money, it takes a lot of votes to get elected. But once you're elected, the first thing you have to do is think about being reelected. In my humble opinion, we should have a one-term limit for president, perhaps 6 years. Then it takes the politics out of it.
Well, I could see that, but it takes a while for a president to get his legs. Frankly, I think the way that our executive branch is set up, with a single president and an almost ineffectual vice president, is antiquated. I think we need a presidential council. It takes most corporations have a president and multiple vice presidents to handle each division. So I think we should go to a presidential council, and that should be much, much more sensitive to domestic issues and not just foreign issues.
Yeah, you know something else? Okay, I just read, and it made a lot of sense to me. I'm reading a book by Lee Iacocca called Where Have All Our Leaders Gone? And he suggested, and I'm inclined to believe him, that when you run for office, we all know that it's not the president in himself who does anything but the folks that work with him, the cabinet. That he should actually, during the election, he should show his entire cabinet, who he would name and what they would bring to the table. And that made perfect sense to me.
Well, yeah. I understand that. In our industry, at least in politics in our nation, we call that a quid pro quo. You actually cannot promise a cabinet position until after you're elected. What it prevents is cronyism, where those who might already be in office
being promised a cabinet position, it might be a move up for them, can't lobby for you and perhaps slant the process.
Right.
I think the president already got himself in trouble with that this last week by promising a position to an individual.
Here in Pennsylvania. He sure did here in Pennsylvania.
That's right. And that's a violation of law. He could be in big trouble over that.
Right, he sure could. Quid pro quo. It was real nice chatting with you. My friend Robert told me to call you, so I just wanted to chat with you about the Gulf oil spill, because I think something's really wrong there. You suggested they're more inclined to worry about saving a well than closing a well. So it's been a real pleasure talking to you.
I appreciate it, Chuck, and call back anytime. You're always welcome.
Okay, bro. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome. What we have here, Earth Explorers, we have a red-hot subject, which is the Gulf oil spill. And it takes these kinds of disasters to kind of point us in the right direction, to wake us up, to slap us around a little bit and realize we can't get stuck in our own little world where everything is just going along, you know, very stably and under control. That's one of the reasons why I want to talk about emergency preparedness in this hour. There are some other events that are happening that you may not know about. The Atlantic storm season could produce as many as 14 hurricanes this year. By the way, hurricane season starts in 3 months. In 3 months. And it usually takes place in the Gulf. If we don't get this oil spill cleaned up, a storm could spread it further than you can imagine. The U.S. government's top climate agency predicted on Thursday, setting the scene for potentially the most intense season since 2005. You remember what happened in 2005, a little hurricane called Katrina. In its first forecast for the storm season that begins next Tuesday, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that's the NOAA, forecast 14 to 23 named storms, with 8 to 14 developing into hurricanes, making it one of the most active ever. 3 to 7 of those storms could be major Category 3 or above hurricanes, with winds of more than 110 miles per hour, the agency said, echoing earlier predictions from meteorologists for a particularly severe season that could disrupt U.S. oil, gas, and refinery operations in the Gulf of Mexico. In addition to the risk that major hurricanes can pose to about one quarter of U.S. oil production and more than one tenth of natural gas output offshore in the Gulf, this year's storms threaten to complicate efforts to combat the environmental disasters of BP's gushing oil well. That's just for starters. You remember recently we had a volcanic eruption in Iceland. A second, much larger volcano in Iceland is showing signs that it may be about to erupt, scientists have warned. Since the start of the Eyjafjallajökull eruption, which caused cancellations of thousands of flights in Europe because of a giant ash cloud, and by the way, that happened because the eruption happened underneath a glacier. So when the water hit the molten lava, it burst into steam, blasting the ash cloud high into the atmosphere. There has been much speculation about neighboring Katla. That's right, Katla. An initial research paper by the University College of London Institute for Risk and Disaster Reduction said, analysis of the seismic energy released around Katla over the last decade or so is interpreted as providing evidence of a rising intrusive magma body on the western flank of the volcano. Earlier seismic energy release at Katla is associated with the inflammation
or the inflation of the volcano, which indicates it is close to failure. Although this does not appear to be linked to seismicity around the other volcano, it added, we conclude that given the high frequency of Katla activity, an eruption in the short term is a strong possibility, the report said. It continues, it is likely to be preceded by new earthquake activity. Presently, there is no unusual seismicity under Katla, Icelandic President Ólafur Grímsson has warned governments about Europe that a significant eruption at the volcano is close. We, that is Iceland, have prepared. It is high time for European governments and airline authorities all over Europe and the world to start planning for the eventual Katla eruption, he said. The UCL scientists, engineers, and statisticians also criticized their response to the earlier eruption. The impact of the eruption on regional airspace could have been predicted and better prepared for, as the growing problem of aircraft ash cloud encounters has been recognized for decades, the report added. By the way, for those of you that aren't familiar with what that is, when these ash clouds are pushed up to 40 or 50,000 feet, it is very precarious and dangerous for jet aircraft to fly through them. The compressors, which are those big fans you see in the front of the jet engine at the airport, will smash and spin that ash inside the jet engine and can even cause catastrophic failure. You wouldn't want that to happen on your trip back from Amsterdam now, would you? Similarly, the potential for ash clouds, specifically from Icelandic volcanoes, to interfere with air traffic in UK, European, and North Atlantic airspace was appreciated by the aviation industry well before the start of the last eruption, it said. The response to the ash clouds' arrival in UK and adjacent airspace was entirely reactive and therefore less effective than it should have been. They should have had new airways already set up, already designed to handle this kind of rerouting of the traffic. That was the problem. They didn't have any airways set up. There was no way to move thousands of flights from Europe to the U.S. and back any other way except a high polar route. By the way, if you don't fly the polar route, it costs a lot more fuel to fly those routes. So these are contingencies that must be taken into consideration. These are earth changes that are getting ready to come, and I want you to be prepared. That's why we researched for weeks and we found 1-800-PREPARE.com. Why do I like the site? Listen, I went to all kinds of emergency preparedness sites. They will sell you wheat, they will sell you beans, they will sell you MREs, they will sell you anything you want to buy. But they aren't packaged correctly. The sites aren't set up so that you can buy using almost any kind of credit, including PayPal. 1-800-PREPARE.com is set up with pricing that the average person can afford. To get set up with a 72-hour pack costs you less than $30. Less than $30 makes the difference between you being a burden on your local emergency response team, your firefighters, your EMTs, and being self-supporting, able to move to a safer area. And I'm not talking about just tornadoes, although hurricanes are very, very famous for spinning off tornadoes, a la Hugo and Katrina. These supercells that move on up into the continent after they make landfall can be almost as devastating as the hurricane itself. Now, the other thing I want you to prepare for is fuel prices. You know what happened after Katrina. I can tell you one story that was just amazing. One of my coworkers, when I was a quality engineer for Lear, took some of his money, some of his self-directed IRA, and he invested in fuel futures when it looked like Katrina was going to make a turn toward land.
he speculated that the refineries in that area would get hit and that the price of gasoline would go through the roof. Well, long story short, it paid off for him. And when he finished, he retired. That's how much money he made off of that disaster. But I don't suspect you all will prepare in that manner. So when fuel prices get back up to $5, $6, maybe even $7 a gallon like they are in Europe. By the way, there's a high degree of jealousy for us in the United States. We're further away from the oil sources than they are, and yet we pay a third the price that they do for oil. And you know what the domestic oil companies do, if there are such a thing anymore? Rather than produce domestic oil, which costs them money to produce, and it's very cheap for them, cheap, like $20 a barrel to produce oil in the United States, they buy the foreign oil, which is a very high-quality oil, and just mark it up and resell it. The beauty is that they get to sell the domestic oil for the same price. Even though it only costs them $20 a barrel to produce, they get to sell it for $80. And now you know why the oil companies put $8 billion a quarter in their pockets, and why they sit there in defiance, not unlike Tony Stark in the latest Iron Man 2 movie, before Congress, blatantly saying that they're not gouging and it's none of their business if the oil companies make $8 or $9 or $12 billion a quarter in extra profits off the misery and the need of the American people. I can tell you, when I was demonstrating our electric vehicles last year, I had one of the reporters for NPR drive the car around the racetrack. When she got back, she got out and she said, "I want to buy this car right now." I said, "Well, unfortunately, I'm not allowed by government regulations to sell you that car right now, but I'm curious as to why you want it so badly." She said, "I'm a reporter, and I drive about 60 miles a day with my job, sometimes a little further to get the stories and make the reports. I had to stop dry cleaning my clothes. I had to stop going to the movies. I had to pass up desserts because I had to buy gas for my car so I could do my job. And it made me mad." I said, "Why did it make you mad?" She said, "Because I knew there was no darn good reason for it. And I don't want to be put in that position again, ever. I want to take control of my own life and my own resources. I want an electric car so I'm never put in that position again." I found that so profound, that here was a reporter speaking her mind, and believe me, she had some passion behind her voice. She was mad because she was at the mercy of someone else for her transportation costs to be able to do her job. I know every one of you out there are in the same position that she is. And I know that you're watching this Gulf spill on the news and you're saying, what in the world could be so hard about it? The water's 5,000 feet deep. It's as calm as a summer pond. It's not storming now. It's easy to work in. The weather's wonderful. It's only 50 miles off the coast. That's a little over 2-3 hours by boat ride. This could be fixed. And with the resources that BP has at their disposal, they should marshal their proper resources into place and take care of it right away. Because in 3 months, it's not going to be the calm summer pond it is now. It's going to have 100-mile-an-hour winds and storm surges, and then the excuses will really fly. If we had a responsible leadership of our government, they would be all over this. They would demand that it was fixed right now. It's a spill in our own backyard, inside our own waters, not in international waters. It's our mess. It's not BP's. We should demand that they clean it up.
And while we're in the process, now that we're awake and all charged up here on X Squared Radio, while you're here getting squared, you ought to be getting prepared. Because these changes are coming. These costs are coming to you. And if you've got that extra $30, I highly recommend a 72-hour emergency preparedness kit. It comes with food and water. And it comes with antiseptics in case you are injured by glass or a puncture wound. Do you know, if you step on a nail and you get Clostridium tetani in your system, you're going to die. People in the wild and in undeveloped countries die from infections, from simple cuts on their feet, on their hands, in areas where they can't get them clean. And when there's no clean water around, it's easy to get an infection. But a mild amount of preparation, just a simple amount of ordinary pink eye powder. Didn't know that was a great antibiotic, did you? It is. It's one of the best topical antibiotics in the world. But a little tube of Neosporin wouldn't cost you more than $2 or $3. If it was in your kit, you could keep yourself from getting an infection and getting a very bad infection and maybe even hepatitis. So I'm just talking to you while things are calm, while the economy seems to be recovering. Where? I have no idea. There are 50,000 people out of work here in Charlotte, North Carolina. 50,000 people out of work. And while the census workers are being hired and fired, sometimes 3 and 4 times, why? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Because every time they're rehired, it counts as a new job created for the administration. It adds up. The census workers, tens of thousands of them all across the nation, are being hired and fired multiple times to make the numbers look greater. They're cooking the books, people. Unemployment is much higher than we expected. 9.9% is what it is in good cities. Here in the South and in some cities, it's as high as 18%. It hasn't been that high since the Great Depression. And I'll tell you this, the rural areas weren't really affected by the Depression the way the cities were. They were agricultural communities. There was always food being grown. There were ways of bartering labor for food. The rural communities didn't suffer like they're suffering now, because now we've specialized our labor. We've specialized our ability to provide on a community basis. Unfortunately, we keep outsourcing those things. We are just becoming a nation of service providers. The actual supplier is overseas. The actual buyer is someone who has a job. But the people in between are left in the lurch. It's a bad design, people. We need to bring the jobs home. How do we do that? Well, we don't do that by starting up textile mills again. We don't do that by starting up buggy whip companies again. We do that by starting new industry. We do that by our communities demanding that electric cars go into production, by demanding that wind generators be put on available hills and coastlines so that we can take advantage of that free energy. We start by demanding that our coastal cities start utilizing ocean wave generators. You didn't even know about those, did you? These float out in the water. They're anchored to the bottom. They make energy based on the regular swells of water passing by. They use floats. The floats going up and down, turn generators and generate electricity. Some of these floating complexes can power whole islands, small towns. That means that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they have clean, renewable energy. Rivers that flow. You don't have to build a dam and hydroelectric generators. They have generators now that work off the bottom currents. They run and don't
obstruct the flow of water. They don't get in the way of fish. They don't change the water tables in the area, but they generate electricity based on moving water. All of these technologies are available right now. So let's talk about it. Robin, you're on line one. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I just wanted to take a quick moment out. I was hearing about today where was Elizabeth Birnbaum, the director of the Interior Department of Minerals Management Service, resigned today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the resignation. Are we expected to believe that this is the only person here that we can point a finger to that totally mismanaged and misappropriated and missed everything, this oil spill from day one?
Well, maybe she was trying to get something done and couldn't, and she's resigning in frustration.
Well, I don't see where, I didn't hear that. I heard that she's resigning, but if she is resigning in frustration, then shouldn't we be expecting the people who, let's say, are the problem that she's resigning because of?
Well, maybe she gets to keep her pension because she doesn't say anything about the inaction that she was getting when she tried to get a budget to go in and clean up the mess.
Is that right?
Well, I'm speculating as much as anyone else is. When these resignations come, I can tell you in politics, it's more a sacrificial lamb than it is action. They don't get any action out of resignations. That's just something for the public, so the public can say, oh, she was the problem. So now I see what the problem is. Now that she's out of the way, we can get something done. I don't believe it for a minute.
No, honestly, I don't believe it either. There's no public here that I know of, or no one I'm talking about, that would be satisfied with that or be able to sit back and say, okay, the problem is out now solved. I mean, this oil spill has been totally mismanaged from day one. BP has unlimited resources to have been able to stop this, financial and supplies and equipment and everything else. They could have gotten anything out. They could have gotten the best experts in the world there in 3 days and had them working on it.
It's amazing that you use the word from day one, because the administration, about 15 days after the disaster, started using that very phrase. We've been on this since day one, and it was absolutely false. By the way, President Obama spends 5 hours a day sometimes on the golf course during this disaster. In times past, we've had a leader where the buck stopped at that desk, and it doesn't now.
Well, ultimately, it's the government that regulates all this stuff, okay? So the fact that the regulations are there, removal of certain requirements, I mean, it goes to them. They are responsible, too, and they have oversight on this.
Well, those government regulations were in place. It is not legal to do what they did with that rig. You're not allowed to remove the mud from the hole to speed up operations and changing bits and things like that down in the hole. That mud is there specifically to contain high-pressure liquefied methane gas and other gases like sulfur dioxide.
I thought they were given a special dispensation in this case to be able to do that.
Yes, they were, but it was a government regulation. And what BP did is they went to the government inspector and said, look, we want to remove this mud so it'll speed things up and we can get this done. And the inspector agreed, but the regulations were in place. They just weren't enforced.
Does anybody know what gave that inspector the authority to do this? I mean, since it seems like it was probably a good precaution to take in the past, and since they did take it in the past, they didn't have these issues when they did this.
Well,
I mean, who was this inspector?
That's a good question.
I'd like to start seen somebody, you know, with some names. I don't want to hear titles, okay? Some fictitious title out there that we're all supposed to listen to. I want to hear who's the guy that was in charge. Who was that inspector? I want to be able to go to that inspector.
I don't know who it was, but I think we could do some investigation and find out who that inspector was. I would say that he probably doesn't have a job anymore, and he's probably working some rig up in Alaska right now.
Yeah, well, I don't want to assume anything when it comes to stuff like this, because I think what gets us in trouble in the American population is they assume somebody's taking care of it. And what we're finding out, I mean, this is 5 weeks later, nobody. It's still not being taken care of. It's right in our face.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I remember what Leilani said in her statement, that the Exxon Valdez spill was similarly disastrous. And although there were $500 million in reparations that they were supposed to make to the fishing community, by the time all the lawsuits got done, 20% of the fishermen that were supposed to get paid were already dead.
Well, I'm genuinely incensed on this one, and I'm really disappointed in the media. Although they say, well, we need to get updates every 15 minutes. They're upset because they just can't report news faster. They don't really care what the news is. But I think the public, when you see these photographs coming in, and you're not getting them from the mainstream media, when you see these things where these dolphins are dying, these fish are dying, I mean, these families are just totally bankrupt. When you see, you know, private citizens who are going out there trying to help, coming back with photographs like this, and you're not getting this from the mainstream media, you almost want to turn off the mainstream media because it's not serving the public anymore.
That's
right. I don't know what it's serving.
That's right.
But it certainly isn't helping us, and I think we need to wise up to it. The fact is that there is the Internet. You are getting more information out from that, and you are getting people who are active and high-profile people who are active in this and who are taking pictures and bringing back information. It's a lot more reliable and a lot more pertinent to what's going on than what we're receiving right now. You know, not that I want this to be a discussion about the mainstream media, but, I mean, when's enough enough?
Well, you have to understand, the mainstream media operates off of selling airtime, and they sell commercial time. And I don't know if you've turned on the television lately, but BP runs a whole lot of commercials on those television stations. If you start slamming your bread and butter, those commercials go away. That's what it's all about.
Well, I'm hoping I'm not the only one who can call in on this tonight. And I hope I can hear from other people who have some, you know, a perspective on this too, or, you know, will back me up. But I really thank you for the time and the call, and I'll let you continue on with the program.
All right. Thanks so much for the call. We appreciate it very much. Call back anytime.
Thanks.
You're very welcome. Well, Earth Explorers, we don't normally make this program about political issues. And this isn't really from the way I'm looking at it, because I have some intimate knowledge of the industry. Many of you, probably most of you, have never been on an oil rig when a sulfur dioxide alarm goes off. You know, that gas, if you breathe it in, your first breath, you are on your knees. Your second breath, you're on your face. And if somebody doesn't get to you, you're dead. When that alarm goes off, you peel that SCBA off, or that filter off, and you get it on your face right away and get off of that rig until the mud gets in place to contain that leak. When you're out there on the water, 50 miles from shore, there are a few lifeboats, but you live there 24 hours a day when you're on that shift. You're isolated. You can't see land. It's way over the horizon. And that rig runs 24/7. So when you're working that shift and that Kelly's turning and you're holding on to 20,000 feet of steel that goes through the water, down through the sea floor to where the structure is, and you're cleaning that out and you're producing oil,
Let me tell you, it's a little bit like riding a bucking bronc. And it can be a little scary. It can wear on your nerves after a while. That's why the pay is so good, because it's hazardous. My friends used to go out to the oil rigs and work the summers, and they would come back with enough money to buy the cars we only dreamed about. But it's hard work, and it's risky, and it's dangerous, and it's dirty. And out there in the middle of the Gulf, there's no room for taking chances like this. And they took a chance, and they lost. And I can tell you from experience, you never, ever, ever want to remove the mud from the hole. It's the only thing between you and that compressed gas that's down there in that well. Now that we have an oil spill leaking into the ocean, coming to the surface and making its way toward the coast, waters are calm, people. This is a nice, long, meandering river of oil out there in the Gulf of Mexico. When the winds kick up, remember, June starts in a couple days. Hurricane season starts the 1st of September. July, August, September. Boom, you're there. 4 months away from hurricane season. If they haven't got it cleaned up in 40 days, they haven't got it plugged in 40 days, what makes you think they're going to have it plugged in 4 months? I'm not very confident unless somebody high up picks up the phone and says, Mr. CEO, I want this thing cleaned up. You have 7 days, and then the military's coming in. That's our water out there, and I want it cleaned up. That's what needs to be said. Now, I don't know what we're going to do about a volcano up in Iceland. By the way, the Katla volcano is about 10 times the size of the last volcanic eruption. The only reason that that volcanic eruption was a problem was because it erupted underneath a glacier. Once that lava hit that ice, it built up pressure underneath that ice cap and blew. That's why we had the problem. This next volcano has a river, an ocean of magma heading for it. If it blows, it could be much larger than the other volcano. If you have plans to go to Europe, I would make some contingencies. If you are relying on business coming in from Europe, I would make some contingencies. And when it comes to those 14 to 23 storms coming into the Gulf, if I were you, and I am, I would call 1-800-PREPARE.com. I would go to their website, 1-800-PREPARE.com, and I would buy some supplies. MREs, maybe a water filter, put it in one of your kids' old book bags, put it by the closet near the front door so you can grab it and head out the door. People, you have nothing to lose. Hope that you buy that and never need it. So, when it comes to emergency preparedness, sometimes it takes talking like an emergency. I don't mean to be an alarmist, but I'm telling you, all you have to do is watch the news. These summertime storms that came through last week, there were people displaced by that. Some of the people were prepared, most were not. Most lost everything. And they were a burden upon the emergency preparedness crews because they didn't even have so much as one meal with them. They didn't have a change of clothes packed. They didn't have an old pair of tennis shoes that they could put in a book bag and make their way out so that they could at least take care of themselves and their family for a few days. Now, I'm going to caution you not to go overboard on this. I know there are a lot of organizations out there that ask you to keep a 2-year supply of food, and that's fine. It's fine to give away. But if you have to move somewhere, you're not going to be able to take that food storage with you. It's going to stay behind. You might want to put some of that food in a forward position, like your parents' farm, or maybe a relative in another valley or something. If you have to move out of an earthquake zone or a tidal wave zone or a storm surge zone, you're not going to be able to take those barrels of wheat with you. You're not going to be packing 5-gallon buckets of beans with you. You're going to take one backpack with enough to get from where you are to where you want to be. Somewhere safe, on your own, taking care of yourself and maybe a couple more people. So if you've got that food storage in your possession, you can take care of yourself and you can take care of someone else that you love. That's all I'm asking. That's why we spent this hour on emergency preparedness. So take care of yourselves, take care of someone else, and it's a much happier ability to survive. That's all I'm talking about. Not trying to be an alarmist here. I'm not trying to get you all excited. I'm just trying to get you to take some action and take care of yourselves. So be safe. We'll take a short break here. And we'll be back after just a few minutes here. Just give me a second to select up some music. I lost track of where I was on my iPod. So here we go. We'll be back in about 3 minutes. Don't go away.
Well, I dreamed I saw the